I'll be giving you some problems on some of these aspects. So you should review your signals and systems material if you have forgotten. And by doing the exercises at the end of each chapter, you will become familiar with this material. If there is a problem, then I suggest you go back to your signals and systems textbook and study. But the impulse response of this now will be delta n minus 1 coefficients, 0.25, 0.5, and 0.25. So at n equal to 0, 1, 2. This will be the impulse response of this filter. Note that I use the arrow. This is delta t at t equal to 0. We do not use the arrow, but we use just the stem plot. And after this, there will be zeros. So that's the impulse response of the one-hand filter. The transfer function of this, you take the Z transform of this is just 1, that is Z to the minus 1, this is Z to the minus 2, and that is 1 plus Z to the minus 1 whole squared, with 1 over 4. By looking at the transfer function, we can see that 1 plus z to the minus 1 is equal to 0 when z to the power of minus 1 is equal to minus 1. So at z equal to minus 1, this function is 0. And because it is to the power of 2, it has two zeros at z equal to minus 1. So again, going back to the theory of the z transform, we should recognize that supposed to meet here, and this is z equal to 1. This system has two zeros and a double zero at z equal to minus 1. That is the signal flow diagram of the panning of one-hand filter. The advantage is that the coefficients are integer values, 1, 2, and 1. Of course, 1 you don't have to show. So multiplication by 2 is just shifting the digital representation of the value. And multiplication by 1 over 4 is shifting the other way by 2 positions. So this can be done very fast in real time. It depends upon sampling rate, but the computation is extremely simple as compared to coefficients that have several decimal places. FIR filter. The impulse response has a finite number of samples. In this case, I need 3 samples. The impulse response is hk equal to bk, k going 0, 1, 2, 3, so on to n. Depending upon the order of the filter, you have n samples in the impulse response. And the impulse response is simply equal to the coefficients of filter tap waves. An FIR filter may be realized non-recursively with no feedback, and hence it is inherently stable as long as these values are within finite limits. The output depends only on the present input sample and a few past samples. Of course, in real-time filtering, you would want the filter to be causal, and a real-life physical filter cannot be anti-causal, that is, it cannot anticipate things that will happen in the future. So the output depends only upon the current input sample and the past input samples. There are no output samples fed back. The filter is simply a set of tap weights with delays. So you need delay elements and multipliers and an adder. The transfer function has no poles. There's only one polynomial in Z, and hence you only have zeros. And in this case, the transfer function has no poles except at Z equal to zero, and that is not of any consequence. That Z equal to zero is here, which is not important in the analysis of stability, and the filter is inherently stable. The filter has linear phase if the series of tap weights is symmetric or antisymmetric. In filtering applications, it is important to have linear phase, or at least partly piecewise linear phase. And in this case, in the case of an FIR filter, that is satisfied if the series of tap weights has symmetry about some point, or antisymmetry. So this filter has linear phase. How do you get the frequency response? To get the frequency response from the transfer function xz, you let z equal to e to the j omega t. T is a sampling interval, 1 over fs. F is frequency in hertz, fs is a sampling frequency, and omega is the radian frequency in equal to 2 pi f. If you set t equal to 1, then you work with normalized frequency in the range 0 to 1, or omega going 0 to 2 pi. And then f equal to 1 or omega equal to 2 pi represents the sampling frequency. And in the z domain, this is dc, and this is half the sampling frequency. And if you go around again, this would be equal to the sampling frequency. But if you go this way, then you would say this goes from 0 to minus half the sampling frequency. So you can treat it either way as going plus minus half the sampling rate, or going full circle, 0 to sampling frequency. Okay. And then lower frequency values are represented as a fraction of the sampling rate in this situation where the frequency is between 0 and 1. I should mention, though, that in MATLAB, for whatever reason, the normalization is different, and f equal to 1 is this point, the maximum frequency. MATLAB uses a different notation. The convention is when you normalize the frequency, you divide the frequency by the sampling frequency, and the maximum is 1, that is the sampling rate. And the maximum frequency component present in the signal is half the sampling rate, if you have obeyed Nyquist rate, or regardless, if you have sampled, that's the maximum rate with or without aliasing, and that is 0.5. MATLAB uses a different convention. So, frequency, it is only from 0 to the maximum component present, which is half the sampling rate. So you have to pay attention to that. So if you want to get the frequency response of the Hanning filter, I'll use the word Hanning because it's commonly used in the literature, you substitute z equal to e to the j omega, and you get 1 over 4, 1 plus 2 e to the minus j omega plus e to the minus j 2 omega. And you let e to the minus j omega equal to cosine and sine, cosine omega minus j sine omega, and you substitute and simplify it. In problems that I give in the end of the chapter and in your exam, you are expected to simplify the solution to sine and cosine at the end, or some functions involving sine and cosine, and not stop at this position. So you should simplify to this and get the real part and the imaginary part so that you can give a magnitude spectrum or magnitude response and the phase response separately. So here, this part is the magnitude response. The phase is indicated by the function here. So the magnitude is half of 1 plus cosine omega, and the angle is minus omega, so this is linear phase. It's a low-pass filter. 1 plus cosine omega is a low-pass function, which looks like this. Because there are two zeros at z equal to minus 1, in this case, the sampling frequency is 1,000 hertz. So at 500 hertz, which is this point, the response of the filter is 0. Because the filter coefficients are normalized so that the sum of the coefficients is equal to 1, the DC response is equal to 1, so on a log scale that is 0. And this is the phase which is linear. So in your lab exercises, when you plot frequency responses, you are expected to show the axis in hertz and the magnitude response in dB. Please pay attention to that. So, looking at the magnitude response, it is obvious that the value is decreasing with frequency, although rather. To check that, it's a fairly simple function. You can plug in a few values for omega between 0 and pi and check the values. If they are decreasing, you can say it is a low-pass filter. Unfortunately, this filter is not very good as a low-pass filter because until, if that is minus 10, let's take minus 10 as a reference, until about 300 hertz, the response is about minus 10 dB. Minus 3 dB could be somewhere here, let's say there, about 150 hertz. But this is not very good to filter ECG signals. It can be good for other signals where the noise is beyond 200 hertz and the signal is up to about 200 hertz. ECG has frequency components only up to about 50, 60, 70 hertz, and not much beyond. So this filter is not good to filter ECG signals. Normally, you don't sample. Because we were recording it with the heart sound signal, and for the heart sound you need at least 1,000 hertz sampling rate, if not more. So depending upon the nature of the signal you are filtering, the nature, the bandwidth of the signal and the bandwidth of the noise, this filter may or may not serve the purpose. If you want more smoothing, you average over more samples. So you could consider averaging over, let's say, 8 samples. And here we can take the coefficients to be all equal to 1 over 8. So take the current sample and 7 past samples. A total of 8 samples, xn, xn minus 1, so on, xn minus 7, divide by 8. The impulse response is this, which is simply 8 impulses, each one equal to 1 over 8 in value. The transfer function is that all the coefficients are equal. And if you were to get the frequency response, substitute exponential minus j omega for z, you get this. And by factorization, because you have a series here going in powers of e to the minus j omega, going from 0 to 7, you take approximately half, in this case, e to the minus j 4 omega out, you get e to the plus and minus 1, 2, 3 omega, and then you can convert them to cosine or sine, depending upon the sign of the imaginary part. In this case, you get 1 plus 2 cos omega, 2 cos 2 omega, 2 cos 3 omega. So this is the frequency response, this is the magnitude response, and this part is the phase. Not exactly here, you have another part here for the magnitude that affects the magnitude. If you take a different part out, e to the minus 3 over 2 omega, then you can take that out. Or it depends upon the number of samples here. This filter has zeros at 125 hertz, 250 hertz, 375, and 500 hertz. It gives more attenuation in the range 90 to 400 hertz than the Hanning filter for that first. This is the transfer or frequency response of the filter, magnitude response and phase response. because there are many zeros, at every zero, you have zero in the magnitude. And there is a change in sign, but this is the magnitude. So this will be negative, this is positive, this is negative. But in the magnitude response, you see them all as positive. Wherever there is a change of sign, there is a change in sign of the phase. But within each part, it is linear. So this is piecewise linear phase response. All of these side lobes, or additional lobes, are below about minus 12 dB. So it is all right. But if you desire a smooth transition from the pass band to the stop band, this is not a good filter because the gain goes up and down. If you are interested only up to minus 10 dB or so, then you can assume that all of these components have been removed. In the stop band beyond minus 10 dB. Typically, you would like a response that is smooth, as the Hannon filter has, and as the Butterworth filter has, as we will see later on. This filter does not have a monotonically decreasing function. These are the zeros of the transfer function, at 125, 250, 375, and 500 Hz, and the complex conjugates of those. There is an important point to observe here that I repeat. You must have seen this in your signals and systems course somewhere. I'll draw a new picture. There is a graphical method of computing or estimating the frequency response of a filter. And that is with the pole zero diagram. Just give an example. So this is the Z plane, and this is DC. To evaluate the frequency response of a filter, you consider a point on the unit circle, and a graphical representation of the frequency response is from the current point, you draw vectors to every zero and every pole. So call them distance to, I don't want to use that. What should I call it? I'll just call it X1. This is X1. This is X1, X2. This is Y1. The magnitude response is given, it is proportional to x1, x2 divided by y1, y2, and so on. That is, if you factorize the numerator of the transfer function and get z minus the first zero times z minus the second zero times z minus the third zero, and so on, and in the denominator you have the poles, then z minus z1, which is this pole, will be this distance that I have called x1 here. And the second zero, this is the distance x2. And in the denominator you have the poles. And the factor representing each pole will now give you a certain distance from this point. So the frequency response, or the magnitude response of the filter at this position, at this frequency, is equal to the distances to the zeros multiplied together, divided by the distances to the poles multiplied together. And because these are vectors, each one will have an angle, call it theta 1, and this is theta 2, or they'll all have to be computed the same way. And then this has another angle, the angle of this vector, the angle of this vector, and call them phi 1 and phi 2. The angle of the filter will be equal to the phase angle, will be equal to the sum of the phase angles of the vectors joining the current frequency point to every zero, theta 1 plus theta 2 and so on, as many zeros as you have, minus the sum of the angles of the vectors joining the current position at the poles. So if you know the pole zero diagram of the filter, which you can get from the transfer function, you can get the frequency response in magnitude to a scale factor, the gain factor that is missing here, and the phase. Obviously, when you are sitting at the position of a zero, then the response is zero. If there is a pole, then if you come to this point, the gain will be infinite if the pole is on the unit circle. And of course, that is not desirable, so you don't put a pole there in reality, but you put a pole somewhere near the unit circle if you want large gain. So wherever you want small gain, you put a zero on the unit circle if you want zero gain, or near the unit circle if you want small gain. Wherever you want a large gain, you put a pole at the corresponding angle, which is frequency, and take the pole as close to the unit circle as possible, not putting it on the unit circle because that would cause instability. Okay? That is a quick recap of something you might have seen in signals and systems. And that is important. So when you have a pole zero diagram, you can visualize or you can imagine the nature of the response easily. There is an interesting relationship between moving average filtering and integration. Now, if you disregard the scale factor, the operation in the moving average filter that we saw just now is simply summation or integration of the signal from n equal to 0 to n minus 7, or from n minus 7 to n, the current sample. So moving average filtering is similar to integration. It is summation. There is a scale factor, a normalization factor. But if you remove that, you are just summing or integrating over a small time window. Comparable integration of the continuous time signal would be of this nature, where you have the integral of xt from t1 to t2, t minus 7 delta t to current sample t. So a moving average filter is like an integrator, except for some normalization factors. Causal manner is yt equal to minus infinity to t, xt. That gives you the integral of xt. Or if the signal is causal, you go from 0 to t. But this doesn't help us much in signal processing. It is simply the average value. If you divide by t, you get the average value, and that is not a useful measure in signal processing. Regardless, from this definition, if you take the Fourier transform, you have the relationship that y of omega is 1 over j omega of x omega plus a DC factor. This indicates that the gain of the integrator is inversely proportional to frequency, so the gain decreases with frequency. So integration is a low-pass filtering activity. And similarly, a moving average filter, which does integration in a general idea, in a general manner, is a low-pass filter. Assuming all the coefficients are positive, that you are taking an average. If the coefficients are negative, then you are doing something else. So the moving average filter that we saw just now, averaging over 8 samples in a moving window, is similar to integrating. The frequency response of integration is 1 over j omega, not counting the additional term. The magnitude is 1 over omega, the magnitude of that, and the phase is minus pi over 2. So the gain of this filter reduces nonlinearly as frequency increases, and the filter has low pass characteristics, integration over time. Integration or accumulation of a discrete time signal for all samples up to the present sample gives this, which is equivalent to 1 over j omega, but now in the discrete domain it is 1 over 1 minus z to the power of minus 1. But this is not useful, as I said. In practice, the result of this operation simply gives the sum of all the values until the current point and will not lead to any useful result. Instead, you do moving window sum within a small window of a few samples, depending upon how much smoothing you want. You can rewrite the moving window integration or averaging filter in a slightly different manner that is similar to integration or accumulation. The same expression I wrote earlier is equal to yn equal to yn minus 1 plus 1/8 of the current sample minus 1/8 of xn minus 8, which was in this average, but now you don't want that. So you add 1/8 of the new sample and remove 1/8 of the sample that now is outside the window, because the window has moved one sample. Yn minus 1 is the average of xn minus 1 up to xn minus 8. For the next one, you remove xn minus 8, you add xn. So this says you can recursively compute the output of a moving average filter over 8 samples by taking the previous output value, adding 1/8 of the current input, and subtracting 1/8 of xn minus 8. So you're reducing the computation to a little extent. And this indicates recursive implementation. If you take the transfer function of this, you get this, where you have the, take this on the other side, yn is yz, this becomes yz times z to the minus 1, this is 1 over 8 xz, 1 over 8 z minus 8 times xz. So this is z to the power of minus 8, divided by this. So this indicates that there is a pole at z equal to 1, but that is canceled by a zero at the same position. So there is no pole on the unit circle, as this implies, because it is canceled by one of the zeros. So effectively, the transfer function is the same as before. You could get a slightly different representation by factorizing and simplifying this, and you get a sinc function. This is a ratio of sine functions, which indicates the sinc pattern that we saw, a main lobe and side lobes that are associated. In this format of lecturing, I'll not be going through all the details. I will try to write some of the important properties and relationships and explain. And if there is something not clear, please stop and ask me. But otherwise, I'll assume that you are able to follow this. And to reinforce this, I would suggest you work these relationships out by hand afterward. The end result is known, so you just have to work your way to come to this point. And I would suggest that you do that. Otherwise, if you just listen to this, you'll forget it later. If you have done these exercises before, it's all right. If you have not done, I suggest you go through this exercise by hand of deriving the relationships that I'm showing you here. Otherwise, it could be a little difficult, or could be very difficult to write the exam. In the examination, I'll be asking questions that will require the derivation of some expression similar to what I'm using here, and the working of some numerical examples, and also the drawing of some signals. So please practice drawing some signals to draw an ECG, for example. And you'll have to do that in the exam on paper. You'll not be able to do on a computer, I'm a bit of a traditionalist in that sense. I would like you to write things on paper. Writing on the computer may be more difficult to show a derivation or to draw something like that. Okay? So please practice drawing signals. It is something simple, but if you don't do it at all, if you have never drawn an ECG signal going like this, your hand will not move like that in the exam. Or to draw a heart sound signal, because I've done it so many times, I can go like this and like that. But again, you must do it a few times. The reason I mention is, in one of the exams I asked to draw a normal ECG and give three examples of abnormal ECGs. So the answer I got, many students gave good examples, but there was one that was interesting. So the student drew this and said normal ECG, and then said, this is abnormal. I said, okay. And then drew something like this, normal and a premature contraction in this. I said, okay. And then, for some reason, the student could not imagine a third type of abnormality. And he or she wrote, it's real, it happened. It is abnormal, the patient died, I don't know when. I gave zero for that. That was cruel, but I still did that. So, you should practice writing a few things by hand, including these expressions, just so that your fingers and hands can move like that. All right, here is an illustration. Here is an ECG signal with high frequency noise. The sampling rate is 1,000 hertz. I could have downsampled and then filtered, of course. But you need a low-pass filter before downsampling anyway. So you need to filter. Using the 8-point moving average filter, this is the response. The noise has been reduced significantly, but there is still some noise. Let me go back here. The response of the filter is this. The gain is below minus 10 after about 90 hertz. So up to about 90 hertz, everything is passed with about minus 10 dB. These are all less than minus 12 dB, so it's all right. They're suppressed, but not completely removed. You would perhaps like a filter that stays below minus 20 dB. And then you'll get better noise reduction. We will look at such filters later. So the result of this filter is, it's all right, but it's not very good. There is still some noise left. Now let's look at the removal of low-frequency artifacts, such as baseline hertz. The problem is to develop a time-domain technique to remove baseline drift, which is a low-frequency signal. It is slowly varying with a frequency of 1 or 2 or 3 hertz, typically. So you want a filter that has gain that is very low at low frequencies. But then you also want to pass frequency components of less than 1 hertz within the ECG. I said earlier that the ECG has components typically from 0.05 to about 50 or 60 hertz, or maybe up to 100 hertz. If you remove too much of the low frequency information present, then you may be changing the shape of the waveform of the ECG. So we need to be careful here, and if you apply certain filters, the ECG could be changed so much that it does not look like a regular ECG anymore. One solution that we can imagine for the moment is that the derivative operator in the time domain has a frequency response that is zero at DC. So could we use that? If you remember, the Fourier transform, the derivative operator in the time domain will remove low frequency information and will remove DC also, and the gain at low frequency will be very small. So could we use that? Large changes in the input will then give you high values in the output. And the ideal derivative operator, d over dt, results in the multiplication of the Fourier transform of the original signal by j omega. The transfer function of the derivative operator is j omega. This you may remember from your signals and systems course. So at DC, the gain is zero. At very low frequencies, the gain is low. So low frequency artifacts, such as baseline drift, should be suppressed by this operator. So frequency response of the two operation is j omega. Gain increases linearly with frequency. At zero is zero. The DC component is removed by the derivative operator. Higher frequencies receive linearly increasing gain. And the derivative may be used to remove DC. But baseline drift is not just DC, it is slowly varying. Low frequency components, but boosts high frequency components significantly because the gain is proportional to omega. If you were to consider the second derivative operator, the response is j omega times j omega, because it's a cascade of the d over dt operator twice. So the frequency response is j omega whole squared, which is minus omega squared. So there is quadratic gain, a quadratic increase in gain for higher frequencies. Again, the gain at DC is zero. The gain at low frequencies is very small. In digital signal processing, the basic derivative, the first derivative is the first difference approximated as xn minus 1 with a time normalization factor which could be ignored. 1 over t, but if you just want to look at the derivative and detect events, this factor could be ignored or removed somehow or incorporated in the threshold. So if you want the rate of change in millivolts per second or volts per second, then you must include this, otherwise remove it. The transfer function is 1 over t times 1 minus z to the power of minus 1. There is a 0 at z equal to 1, the DC point. So z equal to 1 is 1 minus 1, so the gain is 0. So that means what we said earlier. What is the frequency response? H omega is 1 over t times 1 minus exponential minus g omega. Put z equal to e to the minus g omega. And you can factorize that in this manner as you get the response. Magnitude is 2 over t magnitude of sine omega over 2, and the phase is pi over 2 minus omega over 2. So I suggest that you work these out. They're in the book, but I suggest you work out by hand and get just the practice of doing so. So this is 1/4 of a sine wave. It's not linear. This is a sine wave. And this is up to half the sampling frequency. So over one cycle around the unit circle, you'll get the other quarter of the sine wave here. But for low frequencies within a small part, the sine function could be taken to be approximately linear. And then from 0 to about 200 hertz, you can assume this approximately ideal differentiator with a linear response. That's the phase response. Let me show you the signal, an example, and then I'll come back to this. So this is a result of applying the that is the table. First order difference operator to the noisy ECG signal I showed earlier. Of course, this doesn't look like an ECG. This is, if you have the book, you refer to figure 3.6. It'll take more time to go back here. The original ECG with the baseline drift that I showed earlier, the baseline drift is now removed. Let me see if I can go back. It will take some time to get there. There is low frequency artifact that has been removed now, but of course the output for the QRS complex is useless. It does not look like a QRS complex, and there is considerable amount of high frequency noise here, which is amplified by the filter because the gain increases with frequency. So the result that you have is essentially useless. The QRS complex has been distorted severely, the noise has been amplified, the P and T waves have been completely removed. So this is not a good filter to remove low frequency artifact in the ECG, but it is a useful filter to detect the QRS complexes because the output is large and everything else is removed, except for noise, so you can put a low pass filter. So we will see later on that the derivative filter is a useful operator for the detection of QRS points in ECG. Now, having seen the derivative, the first difference, you wanted a break after 1 hour. So would you like a break now?